This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
You have the right to redefine wealth for yourself, so don't succumb to external definitions about who you need to be and what you need to do in this world. You can glean information from everyone, but you have the right to align it to what you genuinely feel called to do.
Well, hello, friends, and thank you for joining us for another fabulous episode of the Color of Money podcast. It's Julia Lachey, and I am joined by none other than my favorite co-hosts, Daniel Dixon and Emmerich Peace. You know him as Unc. And today we have a very special guest. We have none other than Patrice Washington with us today. Friends, if you don't know Patrice, she is big in the wealth world. She is the founder of the Institute for Redefining Wealth, and she has a podcast also called Redefining Wealth. And in fact, that's where I became aware of her, was she was doing some teaching on redefining wealth. There's some pillars that she'll talk about with us today, but I saw her on Steve Harvey. I saw her on Dr. Oz. I saw her on Fox. I saw her at NARAB. I saw her with Barbara Corcoran at REAN. I think that's what it's called. But all these places. And so when we first started this podcast, the Color of Money podcast, Patrice was one of the first people that we reached out to have as a guest. Here we are, I don't know, 2 years later, 3 years, however many years we've been doing this later. And friends, she's here. We have Patrice Washington as our guest today. So Patrice, thank you so much for joining us. As you can see, I'm pretty excited to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. I didn't know it had been 2 years already. Congratulations.
You kept blowing us off.
Oh, no, I would never. No, but I know what a feat it is to get to 2 years. So congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
I'm actually, as of today, entering the 8th year of the Redefining Wealth podcast. And wow. I know it's a labor of love. So kudos to y'all.
Patrice, tell us about the Redefining Wealth concept, the institute you have, the podcast you have. What's that all about?
So, as you said, I was known in media for some time after 4 years on the Steve Harvey Morning Show and years on Dr. Oz. And I would speak all over the country, Julia, and realize that the conversations that I was having with people in the back of the room was less about skill set, and it was more about their mindset, their beliefs, their behaviors, about what they thought was available to them, especially people that look like me, right? And they would give me that it's easy for you to say conversation because they were only seeing me on stage or on camera or hearing me on the mic. And I was just so like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. Let me give you more story. Let me give you the story I can't give you in 3 minutes on a soundbite on television. And so the story is that I actually got into real estate first. You know, at 19 years old, I became a licensed real estate agent. 21 became a broker in Southern California. And that's actually how my business started. I was a real estate and mortgage broker in Manhattan Beach, California, built that up to be my first seven-figure business by 25 years old. And in 2007, you know, I was like, oh, this is great. You know, first generation American kid from South Central Los Angeles. I'm making all this money, driving matching Range Rovers, doing all the stuff. And I thought, oh, this will go on forever. Until I found myself in the hospital on bed rest because I took a fall down the stairs at 20 weeks pregnant that would send me into preterm labor. And it was in the hospital when they said, sorry, ma'am, this baby's coming any minute now. There's nothing we can do, that I found myself at this place of learning what it meant to surrender, which was not giving up, but letting go of the control I thought I had. And I just started praying and asking other people to pray, and was supposed to be any minute now, turned into me being on hospital bed rest for 10 weeks. And while I was in the hospital, I was watching the news. This is 2007. So I know y'all know what was happening in 2007.
Right.
Yes, we
right,
do.
All right. Of the banks that I work with, they were closing down left and right. I saw one of my account executives cursing on the news while I'm in the hospital on bed rest. I'm like, oh my gosh. And, you know, I ended up having the baby still 10 weeks early, but she was healthy. She stayed in the NICU for 3.5 weeks. And I left that hospital, you guys, with a healthy baby, not knowing that I was also going to be facing a healthy amount of medical debt and a lot of deals that clearly fell out because the banks were closing down and all the things were happening. So I went from this seven-figure business to less than 18 months later, scraping up change to feed my daughter. Like, it was everything that could happen in that season happened. And so, you know, from that point, 6,000 square foot home in Southern California foreclosed to living in a 600 square foot box of an apartment in Metairie, Louisiana. And that's where I had what I call my come to Jesus moment. I don't know about y'all. I don't know if anyone here has ever had that good, ugly cry, that good, like, why is all this happening to me? I don't know about Unks, but Julia, maybe you do. I don't know.
Right.
You know, that ever cry or just have those moments. But I was at that moment of just like, man, I thought I had done everything I was supposed to do. I thought I did what my parents came to this country for me to do. Get good grades, you know, get a good job, figure it out. And I felt a lot of shame and guilt and embarrassment around what had happened. So I ended up in Louisiana suffering in silence and having what I call my come to Jesus moment. But that moment also is a part of what gave me my purpose, Julia, to your question about redefining wealth, because I learned after having this breakdown, I was like, man, I passed the broker's exam on the first try. I'm really good at like information gathering, but I didn't know how to ask for help. I like, especially as I think an African-American person, a Black person, I didn't know how to say, I don't know what I don't know. So I suffered in silence. I let things go way too far before I got support, which is why I think platforms like this are so important, so that people are having these real conversations about what it looks like and what it feels like. And I, in that moment, I felt something like I was supposed to share this journey of what I was experiencing. And I had that little devil on my shoulder that was like, who are you to be talking about anything? Look at what you're experiencing. I had just experienced an eviction notice on my apartment door. You know, they had just turned the power off. I chased the power man down with my baby on my hip and begged him to turn the lights on. And then I find this scripture that says, Proverbs 17:16, what good is money in the hands of a fool if they have no desire to seek wisdom, which is why my name is Seek Wisdom now on social media. And it was like a light bulb. There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. I had a lot of education and book smarts. I didn't always know how to apply it. Wisdom is the application of knowledge. And I felt like, oh, I need to share this with people. My first grade teacher, Ms. Boynton, said, when you know something, you have a responsibility to share it with friends. And I carried that my whole life. When you know something, you have a responsibility to share it with friends. And y'all, I got up off that bathroom floor where I had been snotting and ugly crying and carrying on. And I had just learned about blogging. This is March 9th, 2009. I had just learned about blogging. And I was like, I'm just going to start a blog. And that blog turned into me writing for other websites like Black Enterprise and Upscale back in the day. And then magazines and media. And now the podcast, 20 million downloads, like, the clients everywhere. But out of all of that, the conversations that I've had with people the most are not just the skill set. You guys all know that there's more than skill set that make you successful. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we know what to do, but there's a who to be that comes up. And a lot of people I find can't apply the information that you all give, that many people give out here, because it's the beliefs and behaviors that hold them back. Yeah. So I went back to school, got an MBA in behavioral finance and financial psychology. And I blend that with now 20 years of all the things.
Tell me, the MBA is in behavioral finance?
Behavioral finance and financial psychology.
I would have never even thought that there would be such a degree. What do you learn in behavioral finance?
It's still like a relatively newer discipline, especially as a Black woman in the space. There's not very many of us. There's more of us that are coming on board. But it's literally just studying why we do the things with money that we do. And so, I mean, it's no secret to you guys. I know you mentor a lot of people. You hear people set goals and say, oh, I'm going to do this thing. This is my year. We started out every year, January 1st. This is the year that I finally do my first flip, or I become an agent, or I do this. And then life happens. Life be lifing.
That's Daniel's right? favorite thing. He loves coaching people who do that.
Yeah. Absolute favorite.
Life happens. And you realize that even people who are really brilliant end up self-sabotaging. And Ooh. So it's like, why is that? And how do we help people be better with money, not just by talking to them about budgets and credit reports, but by helping them look at their relationships, their faith, like their work, their space, all these other parts of your life that impact your finances and these goals you keep setting, even when you're not thinking about it. A lot of us set goals and we say things, but we don't think about how the rest of our life needs to come together to support that. So that's what I study and that's what I coach people through.
When you talk about this behavioral finance and things, I'm curious to know, what do you find to be one of the most common characteristics that people have as a barrier? Is it comparing themselves to other people? Is it something else? What's the common number one thing psychologically that you deal with people when you're talking about building wealth or finances in general?
I would say it's one of the biases, like anchoring bias is a big one. So anchoring bias is when you connect to a piece of information that you may have gotten early in your career or in childhood, and then that is the end all be all. Even when you have been exposed to new information, you keep going back to the same thing. So even if, you know, as a child, you heard that you shouldn't take on credit cards, as an example, right? And so now you're building your business. You need to, you know, handle cash flow in a different way. You may not necessarily have the cash. If someone says, oh, just get a line of credit. Imagine for those of you who may invest or flip properties or something, someone saying you need to take out a loan or whatever. And you heard very young that if you do that, you will fail. But it's really, we know as adults, that's one of the only ways that you can grow your business and do the things. People hold themselves back because they're like, I cannot do that. But then when you give them that as an option or a resource, they're like, no, I'm just stuck. I'm stuck. And right. You're like, no, there's so many things you could do. That anchoring bias is making them stay connected to a piece of information that they got with no real context, or it didn't make sense, right? For maybe it made sense for the person who said it to them. But it doesn't make sense for you now, but you're still living from this old story. So there's a lot of biases, you know, that people have, or herding bias. A lot of people don't take the steps to venture off and try something new, maybe in real estate or in any industry, because then they would be separated from the herd. And what is that herd? Maybe their family, their friend group, their church group, something else where people have said, no, this is the only way to do it. And now they won't allow themselves to expand and trust that they can go in a different direction without thinking it'll be offensive to other people.
That kind of sunk in with me, Patrice, the anchoring bias. And this is what I wrote. I wrote anchoring bias, using information from the past to judge the future, no matter how outdated.
How do you break that? You have those anchors, and I've heard this story with so many different examples over the years with agents not getting into production and this fear of success. There's all these different things. I'm curious, how do you fight that? How do you break that?
Well, one of the first ways is just to acknowledge that's what you're experiencing. Something that I always talk about is radical honesty. And I think most of us live from rationalizations and not radical honesty. And I always say we will rationalize anything, ration out lies. We will keep lying to ourselves and keeping ourselves like in these little spirals, you know, where you see people talk themselves in, talk themselves out, same breath, same conversation. We'll keep ourselves in those cycles because we're not willing to be radically honest. And that means so honest that it hurts. One of the first things is coming into awareness of, where did you get that from? Like, what question I always tell my clients when we're working through stuff like this is, who said, trace it back to the first time you may have heard this piece of information. And usually when people do, Daniel, they trace it back to someone that they wouldn't even want to trade lives with.
Yeah.
Like that information or that little tip or whatever they were getting, if you really looked at the source of where it's coming from and you got radically honest, no matter how much you love or respect that person, if you got radically honest about their results, and if you actually want their results, that is a part of like dismantling that chain that keeps you, you know, that anchor that keeps you there. Because you can go, I can love that person and also accept the fact that I have the right to reject advice that's not in alignment with who I am and where I'm going now. That was outdated advice, and that was their scenario, and I don't desire to switch places with them. So why would I operate from that level of thinking or behavior?
Well, what's interesting about that is like radical honesty is scary. And when you think about people can't be honest with themselves, how do you practice radical honesty? Like, that means I got to look myself in the mirror and tell myself the truth. Like, that hurts. I think that goes into self-accountability, which is one of the biggest problems we have in society, in my opinion. But like, you can never be accountable if you're not being completely honest with yourself.
Exactly. I don't know if the honesty hurts as much as the needing to get the guts to do something about it. Mm-hmm. I think that people don't ask themselves better questions, because if they got the answer, then they would be responsible for doing something. And what we would like to do is pretend that we don't know anything is wrong, or pretend that we don't know what to do. And I think a lot of times we just don't want to deal with the consequences of doing something different, because there's this idea that, again, I think maybe Emmerich said it, the fear of success or leaving the tribe or people thinking, oh, now I think I'm this. I always tell a lot of people, and you guys may see this with real estate agents, they want it so badly and their vision is to maybe be an agent or an investor or do all this stuff. But then there's something that comes up that prevents them from wanting to be visible.
And that's one of the things, like when I go through the session about the elements of your life, and what I like to do is I like to talk about your journey. What trauma between 1 and 5? What trauma between 5 and 6? What trauma between, 10 and 12? And what are you telling yourself about those things that happened to you as an adult? You can't go back to those things. Just like you were saying, Daniel, you got to take accountability. You can't go back to those things as an adult. You got to figure out how to get beyond whatever that childhood trauma was, because that's keeping you from being the most productive person that you actually could be.
This came to me earlier this week, and I have a conference coming up, and I feel like this is like one of the things I want to teach from, because people talk about healing so much, like online and social media, that there's a lot of people that camp out in healing. They camp out in this idea that like, oh, well, I'm working through my childhood trauma, right? And so now they're just sitting in it, and that becomes their identity, that they're working in the childhood trauma. And the visual that I got was a roundabout, because we have so many roundabouts here in Atlanta, is this roundabout. And instead of like, just, okay, I acknowledge I had childhood trauma. Mama did this, daddy said that, I should have been better, blah, 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 all that. Okay, so we acknowledge it and we see it, but we still have to keep ourselves moving down the path, right? You don't go in a roundabout. Imagine seeing someone just going in the roundabout, round and around, and cars are passing and things are happening, and you literally just get stuck in that loop. That's what I see people do, because they think that to acknowledge something means I have to live in it and sit in it and be stuck in it. And I'm like, you can have that, what mama, daddy, whomever, whatever happened, and also continue on with the vision that you say you have for your life. It's like, it's not, how do I wait until I get that out the car? I'm thinking, put it in the backseat and tell it, we're going in this direction. And when you need to talk, I'll talk to you, but we're still headed in this direction. It's not an excuse to stop.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Everything.
I wish we could teach some of these principles in grade school, because I feel like when you're an adult, like, how the hell do you just put it in the back seat? Like, I haven't been trained on how to do that. I know how to do my math and my history lessons and everything, but it's just so powerful on how to be a productive human in life for yourself, for your family, for everything, you know?
Yeah. And I think in this day and age, it's so important that we, I guess you would say, do the work. Now, my daughter now that I told the story about is 18, and she's going to college on an athletic scholarship and all this stuff. And I did a retreat in Hawaii for my mastermind clients this summer. And I loved when my part was done, I didn't expect her to raise her hand and have something to say. But after all the ladies spoke, my daughter rose her hand and she said, you guys are getting this, you know, for a couple days, but just imagine, I've been hearing this for 18 years. And she's like, you know, if you look at me and think I'm really poised and all this stuff, it's just because this is how my mom has talked to me my whole life. And I just say that to say that as we do our work, because it wasn't that I was intentionally, I have, but it's not that I'm always intentionally telling her things. It's more about who I'm being in her presence and her getting to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think we have tried to shelter the young people in our lives from the real life work of what we experience and the ups and downs of, for me, entrepreneurship and all those things. I think that's the best teacher we can give. And because Lord knows, I don't know what they're going to do in school. But I think if you're a parent listening, like the best gift that you can give the young people in your life is to keep it real about your experiences and the lessons you've learned, as opposed to trying to shelter them from it.
We spent so much time making sure that my kids didn't live the life I lived.
Yeah.
So I was lacking conversations because I was so busy getting it, grinding, making sure that they lived a different life and making sure I didn't go back to West Baltimore. So that was it. But this conversation with, like Daniel brought up, that's the conversation I think for our listeners, to make sure our listeners know and understand it. These are conversations that they have to have with their young folks at this point in time, because if they don't have them now, they're setting them up for failure in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Patrice, you mentioned, you know, you had something that you were going to teach on. You said what I like, and I'm hoping that you're going to tell us what these six pillars that you teach on are. Can you share with us what those pillars are?
Yes. So for 8 years, I've been teaching from the six pillars of wealth, and I'll just run them down for you. The first pillar is fit. It's about becoming your best self. And in the fit pillar, we talk about being mentally and physically well. So we all hear health is wealth and all this stuff. But the reality is, like Emmerich said, many of us grew up believing like, I just got to grind it out and make it happen, which we were applauded for that. And many of us became very successful for that. And that's a wonderful thing. However, there's also a great population of us, especially as Black people, who are dying from diseases that are preventable because we've been trying to get to the bag and we have not been going to the doctor. We have not been taking care of ourselves, especially for women and women of color. We have pushed ourselves all the way to the bottom of the to-do list and taught other people to do the same. So if someone in our family needs anything, we're the first ones that people call. But when we need something, we've somehow come to believe that we'll just figure it out. So the first pillar is about being mentally and physically well, because I genuinely believe if you have a vision for your life, it is your duty and responsibility to protect the only vessel you're going to get. Period. Because I don't know about you guys, but this year alone, I have experienced so many deaths of good friends. Just recently, 41 for my partner's good friend, one of my good friends, 45 years old. I was literally in the airport coming back from that trip to Hawaii, and a man just dropped in front of me at LAX, less than 4 feet away from me. And by the time I walked back by, he had died in the airport. Something, the visual of that, you guys, to see people continue to be across from a man that literally just died and they're ordering their Starbucks and eating their food and going on was such a like wake up call to life keeps going.
Yeah.
Like people are going to just keep walking by you and doing what they've been doing. But it's your family who doesn't have their dad or their mom. It's your mom who doesn't have you. It's your siblings, you know? And so that kind of leads me to the people pillar. That's the next one. It is about creating relationships that matter. You guys could probably identify with this. People have asked me for years how I have gone from, you know, crying on that bathroom floor in that 600 square foot apartment to being on an award-winning show on PBS and like all these things that have happened. And I always say it's the people pillar. I literally believe that there's always someone watching you who has the power to bless you, but who are they watching you be? I'm sure even for you, as you mentor people, the people that you watch and you're like, they got something and you can see how they're showing up, or the people you naturally gravitate to and want to help more. It's not just the squeaky wheel, right? And so in creating relationships that matter, we talk about making sure we're preserving relationships personally and professionally. And, you know, so that's the people pillar. Space pillar, setting up your life to support you. There, I forget what the exact percentages. Like we spend like 76 hours a year looking for things we already own but can never find. Whether that's like keys, glasses, like whatever it is. Like we spend so 3 days a year just walking in circles talking about where's my such and such? Where's my such and such? So in the space pillar, we talk about the fact that clutter is the physical manifestation of chaos in your mind. And a lot of the creativity that is blocked for people is just trapped in the stuff that they won't release. Mm-hmm. And I'll say in a lot of my clients, even hidden clutter is still clutter. Not only do you guys know that people spend billions of dollars on storage space, but they also just hold all this dead weight from seasons that no longer serve them. Like, I was just talking to a client earlier this week that had a really negative experience at a corporate job. And in her office where she was trying to build her new business, she still had all the binders and paperwork and folders from this job that let her go. And like, she was traumatized at. And she had all this stuff as if it was going to come up. Like, she would, I'm like, who would call you
right.
2 years later and ask you for any of that paperwork? Why are you keeping all of that in the space where you are trying to create something new, but you're holding on to something old? Like, it could just be simple things like that when you take inventory of your space and if that really serves what you say you desire. Then there's a faith pillar as the fourth pillar. It's believing in something greater. I always tell people, I don't care what you say you believe, but do you make time to practice it? Because at some point, this journey is going to bring you to a very humbling place where you need resilience. And I know all of us are only still here because we've had to build the muscle of resilience. Now, I say, if you don't believe in something, you'll fall for everything, because life is always going to be bringing all the things to you. And then work pillar is living in your life's purpose. I will say one of the big things that I've learned in financial psychology is that a lot of people's financial challenges are really rooted in unfulfillment. When you are unfulfilled at what you do day in and day out, it creates this void. And a lot of people try to fill the void with buying things or people. Either we overextend ourselves, overgive, become the savior for everybody else. There's a lot of the guilt of the one who made it, right? When we see athletes, but even successful entrepreneurs, if you're the one that made it in your family and you take on this like identity, you end up trying to like buy people's respect, their love, their affection. And so people will be in jobs that they hate, but because they get the cash to buy the people, they just keep going in that cycle. And then they mismanage their finances, not because they can't figure out how to budget. It's just they've attached a whole lot of other meaning to what those paychecks mean and represent in their lives. And then the last one is money. And it's just about managing what you do have wisely. And the reality is, when people start to clear up the clutter and the other five pillars, all of a sudden they can finally take the advice. Usually they can't take it because their lives are so cluttered and there's so many blocks because of things happening in those other pillars. So that's what I help people unpack, is what's going on in those other five pillars that are making you show up this way with money.
With high achievers, what do you think is the one that's neglected the most, the one pillar that's neglected the most?
Let me give you two. One of the ones with high achievers that's neglected the most is the money pillar. And that's usually because high achievers just feel like, oh, I'll go make more money. So they won't stop and create plans and finally do their trust or their will or do like all the financial paperwork, because they're usually just too busy. Like, oh, I'll go make some more money. So they have learned to throw money at problems is a big one. And then I would say back to the fit pillar. I think the fit pillar is a big one. I always call it the awakening stage. Most people won't start to examine any of this until they get the diagnosis or something happens. I call it the boulder effect. And the boulder effect is, you know, we have the pebble. So you get a little nudge. Maybe you had a little heartburn and thought something was wrong. You're like, no, what was that? But you ignore it. You know, it comes up a couple times, but it's not too painful. You take a little something and you go past it. The rock happens. Something else happens with you physically. And you're like, oh, I should pay attention to that. Most people won't pay attention until the boulder. Like, something big has to happen. And then they go, oh, shoot. And all of a sudden, what they didn't have time for becomes their whole life. All of a sudden, you didn't have time to make the doctor's appointments, and now the boulder hits, and now your whole schedule is flooded with doctor's appointments, and all of a sudden, you have time. Yeah.
One of the things that is like nothing to do with any of this, but everything to do with all of this, is I think that you have mastered your craft. So for a lot of our listeners, many are in real estate, most are entrepreneurs, and most are looking to build wealth in some way. What I've heard you say in all of this, and you said it right when we first started, you said, it's the only thing I teach on. One of the things that I know that like Jason Abrams or Gary Keller, through interviewing people, when they interview people that are highly successful like yourself, they can easily say what they do and they're a master at it. And so you literally, I've heard these six pillars before, and you can easily talk about it in any stage, in any place, in any environment, because you have learned to master your craft. One of the challenges of high successful people, whatever you call them, high capacity leaders, whatever you called it, Daniel, is that sometimes people try to be the master of everything. I mean, so many things, I can't be good at none of them, you know. And what was the aha for me was, you have mastered this skill that you have of coaching people around the psychology of finances. Those six pillars are the same six pillars I heard, I don't know, what was it, 5, 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm. I've taught on them for 8 years. Can I tell you why, though? Because I used to be like that, yeah. Julia, with yeah. the like, oh, maybe I should. I was being recruited at one point to be a Dave Ramsey influencer. And they brought several of us down to Franklin, Tennessee. And I remember coming into the whole compound, which is beautiful and all this stuff. And there's this timeline on the wall. And, you know, I'm looking at the timeline and the pictures and all the stuff. And I saw that Dave Ramsey wrote Financial Peace in 1981. That's the first time that he put it, packaged it in something, taught it at a church or something like that in Tennessee. And I said to myself, 1981 is the year I was born. And this is years and years ago. But I was like, this man has taught this same thing over and over again. Maybe the modality changes as time changes, mm-hmm. as resources are available, you know, as but the basis of it is the same. And I made a pact with myself that if I believe that this is what God called me to do, there is no reason for me to run around trying to be everything to everyone. I need to stay in mm-hmm. my lane and be 10 toes down for the six pillars of wealth. So I've developed an assessment around it. We have a 60-point assessment. I have courses around it. I have a mastermind around it. Everything that I do is around it because I know that as I continue to work with people and teach people, that continues to inform right, how I can keep supporting others. And I just keep going deeper in the work instead of trying to go wider. Yeah, and
that's good.
That when people yeah. ask me why I left the Steve Harvey show, that was why. I was on the show for 4 years, radio and television, radio every week and television like every couple months. And when I left, people were in May 2018, they're like, why would you leave a show with millions of people? And I said, because those people stumble upon me. I'm here for the people who are praying for someone like me to come into their lives. And I can't keep splitting my effort, my attention, trying to tap dance for everybody. So it was a wonderful opportunity. But you got to know when a season is up as well and know when to double down on what you've been called to do.
Yeah, I think that's the important lesson because so many people, particularly in our space, are trying to figure out what all the things are when really the thing is, like you said, where were you? Where you should you be and plant your feet and go deep, not wide, right? That's a lesson all in of itself.
One of the things you say is chase purpose, not money. Mm-hmm. What are a question we could be asking ourselves every day or every week to make sure that we're on that right path of chasing purpose?
So one of the questions is, am I making this choice from a place of faith or a place of fear? When we're chasing money, it's usually from a place of fear that we won't get another opportunity. We won't have another deal. There won't be another possibility. I'm going to lose this somehow. And I think that's how we end up in spaces or places or partnerships or relationships that are misaligned and ultimately end up failing or feeling heavy for us anyway. And if we would have said, you know, am I making this from a place of faith? Then typically money can be attached to that. But it's like the only reason we make the decision can't be just for the paycheck, because if it is, you will pay for it later. Some form or fashion, you're going to pay for it later.
I see a lot of people that have trouble with forgiving themselves grace. We can't be in a position of healing or becoming better if we don't give ourselves permission to not be okay or forgive ourselves for these things. What do you suggest for people that struggle with that on giving themselves grace or giving themselves permission to move past?
Yeah. That's such a good question, Daniel. I remember years ago, I was talking to a coach of mine and I was like, how do I forgive myself for this thing? I was in my 20s. And she said, forgive yourself. Are you sure you mean forgive yourself or do you mean thank yourself? Because isn't she the same person mm-hmm. that also went out and got that broker's license that taught you about mortgages and real estate and, you know, got you on this path? And I was like thinking through all the times that I was like, oh, so mad at myself for this when I was 21 or 25 or 29 or 33. And then I had to go back and take inventory about what was happening in my life at that time, the fact that I did the best I could do with what I had. And then I started looking back and thanking my younger self. You know what? Thank you. Because had you not made that decision, we may have never discovered therapy. And it was in therapy that you learned to forgive other people who will never say, I'm sorry. And you know what? I'm glad that you stayed in that relationship a little longer than you should have, because that drove you, you know, to church and to being someone who set up a prayer room. And now look at how stable your faith is. All of those things that you did led you to this point to become the person that you are. So I would say if you are someone who's, you know, in this season of like, man, I'm trying to forgive myself, I would just invite you to flip that and say, what can I thank myself for from that same season of life? And for some of us, it's just thanking ourselves for surviving, because we've been through a lot. And the fact that you kept making moves and decisions and you're still here, if you're listening to this podcast, you have the audacity to still be learning, to still be trying to grow, to still be expanding yourself in the midst of all the things that we're currently experiencing in this country, in this world. But beyond that, all the things that you grew up experiencing, I feel like give yourself a pat on the back. Look at you. You did a good job.
So, Patrice, I heard you say something. I heard you talk about women's retreat and women's this. Do you only work with women?
No, I don't only work with women, actually. I have a few good men in the Institute for Redefining Wealth. I so few that I know them by name and I talk to them by name. No, you know, I've had male one-on-one clients throughout the years. It's just overwhelmingly women are my platform, and I tend to be invited to a lot of women's events, like what Julia saw me at, Women's Real Estate Investing Network. But no, I work with men.
We got to get some help, too, now. You can't be just out there just leaving us alone.
I always welcome the fellas in. You just have to be ready for a lot of, you know, feminine energy in the space. And we're like 98% women, but I do hope to expand that. We actually have several women coming to our conference that are bringing their husbands and partners, and they always love it.
I will end it with saying that there is a time and a place for everything. Y'all know how I feel about Black men, and I think Black men should be included in everything, and I don't want to go nowhere where there's no Black men. However, I will also say that there is, as we often say, the power of representation and the things that it brings. There are, when I first started doing a lot of public speaking, there were two people that I really would watch because I wanted to emulate and model. Patrice was one of those. And then Marky, of course, because, you know, I love Marky.
Oh, she was so fun. She was on your book launch.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. Yeah. Marky is a phenomenal speaker, and the same thing. And so there's a space of time and place for everything. Don't try to take Patrice from us, Emory. Can we have something, please?
You claiming her as a national treasure?
But honestly, no, honestly, I do want to just say I did see her at a, and I don't normally go to women's things because I don't normally go to women's things, but I did see her in that space. And it was one of those moments that it was a lot of great representation of who we all could be. And she offers something specific that I think is a little bit specific for women to be able to kind of understand some of the things that she shares in her talk. Because y'all don't know nothing about carrying the baby on your hip and chasing down the electric man. Y'all don't know nothing about that. Yeah.
I do speak to other audiences, but yeah, it's overwhelmingly women.
Well,
yeah.
Patrice, in ending, what's the last thing you would like our listeners to know? If you could leave them with one thing, what would that one thing be?
That one thing would be that you have the right to redefine wealth for yourself. So don't succumb to external definitions about who you need to be and what you need to do in this world. You can glean information from everyone, but you have the right to align it to what you genuinely feel called to do. So redefine wealth for yourself.
I love that.
We never said how people can get in touch with her.
I'm at patricewashington.com. Of course, all things Patrice Washington are there. And then on social media, Instagram, Seek Wisdom PCW, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Patrice Washington. That's why I messaged Julia. It's on LinkedIn.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you, Patrice. We will catch y'all on another episode next week, Color of Money Podcast. Y'all take care.
Follow the Color of Money Podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.